It's time for Windows Weekly. Leo Laporte here with Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, The Verge's Tom Warren, Ars Technica's Peter Bright. Yes, they're all here today because it's build time. What did Microsoft announce this morning? What does it mean for us all? Let's find out next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 569, recorded Monday, May 7th, 2018. Build. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Moogsoft. Reduce IT alerts and tickets by up to 99%. Visit Moogsoft.com to learn more and sign up for a demo. It's time for Windows Weekly, live from Build. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet.com, and together they are in Redmond. I've seen your pictures, well, Paul, in these.
Actually, in Seattle.
It's in Seattle? It's not in Redmond?
Yeah, Seattle.
Paul's staying at a very nice hotel. Are you staying at the same nice hotel, Mary Jo?
I am.
Beautiful views. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. And it's good that you got some reward for sitting in the keynote this morning.
Oh, man.
How long was that?
That reward was deep thigh thrombosis.
I think it was 3.5 hours.
That's
maybe
a long keynote.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was full of fascinating Azure tidbits.
Sure.
Is tomorrow going to be? Tomorrow's another keynote. It's going to be the Windows keynote, right?
Right.
Well, it's going to be the Microsoft 365 keynote because, as we remember, Windows is no longer a thing.
Oh. So would that be one that would be more interesting, you think, to the mm-hmm. general audience? It's unfortunate because we won't be covering it because that's when Google I/O's keynote is.
Oh, I see. So supposedly, we have been told everything that's going to happen tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I find that a little hard to believe, but we can talk about what they told us.
Good. So we'll now know everything ahead of time.
Yeah.
So I did not, just because, you know me and spoilers, I didn't want to spoil today's show, so I did not watch the keynote.
Nice. Nice. You didn't scroll forward to the end just to see how it wrapped up?
No Thanos for me. I want to know from you what the big stories are.
Okay.
Where to begin?
Any thoughts?
Do you have the notes up? I do have notes.
I do.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I see the first one. It says, the world is a computer.
Yeah, actually, I would say even before we get to that, I think the way they structured today was kind of interesting and possibly a warning to future generations of keynoters about how to structure a keynote. So,
wait a minute. Even Capicella, Chris Capicella, Microsoft's chief marketing officer, is having a little laugh on themselves.
Yes.
He tweeted what? What did he say?
He said, it's taking you guys longer to set up than a Microsoft keynote.
So, well, even Frank Shaw, who, you know, had been kind of overseeing the operation, was telling these guys. He told us, you know, we were on that rooftop deck yesterday. And I said, how long is this thing going to be tomorrow? And he says, well, it's listed at 3 hours, but it's going to be longer than that.
Holy cow.
And they, you know, he had said to them that they were cutting stuff. And he said, guys, this thing's going to come in over time, you know, and it did. So the structure was interesting. Like I said, it was sort of a vision half with Satya Nadella and then a more hands-on demo, you know, Azure News type half with Scott Gu. Those might have been two different days.
I agree. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was a weird way to open, although they did it very intentionally. Like their idea was to open with kind of the big philosophical, high-level thinking about, you know, the world and the state of the world and Microsoft's role as a protector of privacy and ethics, right? And it went really kind of super high level. And I was surprised that's how they started a developer show keynote, I have to say.
What, I get bad news, Leo.
What?
Peter found us.
Oh, crap. I mean, oh, wonderful. Peter Bright will be joining us from Ars Technica in moments.
We'll have to figure out how to fit him into the frame.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
It's always interesting to me to watch what companies do with their so-called developer events.
Yeah.
I think they realize that even though, you know, they've gathered developers and they really should be messaging directly to developers, that the press and the general media watches with interest what they say. So they can't just make it a developer keynote, can they?
Right.
Well,
no.
The Microsoft one, though, is still, I would say, very different from Google or Apple developer events, because the primary keynote at those two events is very much driven solely for the benefit of the press and the general public. There's very little in the way of coding or any direct developer engagement type stuff. Whereas Microsoft spent 2 hours on that very thing today, and they've always done that. So the other big difference is that Microsoft's high level stuff has evolved under Satya Nadella to be more about what Mary Jo was just describing, I think, or someone was talking about, the, you know, save the world type stuff, which there's some debate over the efficacy of this conversation. You know, Microsoft as the, you know, Microsoft's vision for the future of privacy and security and trustworthy AI and, you know, that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
that is where, you know, Apple always does that too. Apple really, I think, overplays their hand as the benign, you know, corporation, but they seem to get away with it. Sure. Do you think that's what's inspiring Microsoft to do this too, or they genuinely feel this way and they really want to let the world know? Or
I think they wanted to signal to people who haven't really been paying close attention, like, guys, it's a different Microsoft, right? And it was weird. During the keynote, I was having this debate because a few developers were like, wow, I can't believe this is how they're starting the keynote. Like, this is crazy. They didn't start with a bang or a big demo or a big something. And Miguel Diaz-Casa, you know, the guy who came from Xamarin.
Xamarin.
He got on and he said, you know, we're doing this intentionally. We were trying to show people it's a different Microsoft, and this is what we think about now, and we care more about these things. And I was like, oh, okay, well.
I'll tell you, it's a different Microsoft when you got Miguel Diaz-Casa stating the corporate mission.
I know, right?
That is, I mean, for me, it's a little, because, of course, he was an open source advocate, created Mono, which was a .NET, you know, clone for Linux. And so for him to say, well, we want to talk about what we're up to, that is a new Microsoft. That is. And I kind of celebrate that. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's good.
Yeah, and I think in the era, you know, with Facebook having all these issues around privacy, Microsoft wants to, without actually calling out Facebook, say, hey, guys, we're the ones over here really worrying about your privacy.
Well, it's interesting. They're taking a page from Apple's book, aren't they? And really, the companies that sell products as opposed to advertising can do that.
Yeah.
Google and Facebook, really, that's
the only
monetization method, right?
By the way, it is fair. Microsoft has long pushed a trust message, and it was, you know, with the transition to the cloud. So remember, this is the company you trusted in the enterprise. This is the company you can trust in the cloud. I would just say that as far as advertising goes, in Microsoft's case, it was not for lack of trying. Yes, it's fair to say their primary business is not advertising, but, you know, if it could have been,
well, same thing with Apple. Okay, Apple tried iAds and failed. So make a virtue out of a necessity. I think Microsoft has a good point, because in the 90s, in business, Microsoft was absolutely the trusted partner, right?
And they have been all along.
I guess they never lost that mantle.
Yeah, and when you think about the IoT future and this intelligent cloud, intelligent edge thing, you have to look at these other companies that might be involved in this. And some of them are a little sketchy, you know, with regard privacy and security and so forth. And so there's a good message there that I think Microsoft has to compete with companies like Google, especially, but also possibly even Amazon, you know, which has an ulterior motive of its own. Microsoft has always taken a pretty direct approach to, we have this thing and we're selling it, you know, and, you know, that might benefit them in this future.
Yeah. It also was the first build keynote since they had that reorg where Windows was split up, Terry Myerson was out. And so I think they also consciously wanted to kind of set the stage and say, you know what, they didn't actually say this, but it's like, we're not the Windows company anymore, guys. This is a different Microsoft. We're going to give you a different keynote because we're now about things that we really weren't about in the past. So they did talk, you know, a little bit about Windows in the guise of Microsoft 365 and a little touching on embedded Windows with Windows 10 IoT. But the message was definitely, we want you, the developer audience, to hear what we have to say about the intelligent edge when we're talking about client. That was today's message.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. What did you just say?
Were you taking a nap?
No, I just drifted. Oh, I drifted. But sometimes, you know, that'll happen. You'll be listening and making sense of something, and then a word or two will hit you, and you don't understand it, and it makes no sense. So,
yeah.
Whatever you just said, I'm all over.
Let's step back. No, so you know, from the perspective of people like us, the de-emphasis of Windows, especially Office, somewhat in lieu of something called Microsoft 365 is, you know, I don't, you know, it reminds me a little bit of the every Surface device is now a laptop, and we're just going to call them that, even though Surface Pro was very much not a laptop, but you just have to fix that this is some kind of a laptop because they have a marketing imperative that that's what this thing is. You know, we'll see. You know, tomorrow's the Windows 10 day, like I said, or the Microsoft 365 day. But, you know, they did have that line, I believe, in the keynote, which was certainly in the Joe B. blog post, which is something to the effect of, going forward, we hope that people who consider themselves to be Windows developers today or Office developers today will now consider themselves to be Microsoft 365 developers instead.
Ugh. Ugh. I know. I mean, how did the developers in the crowd respond to that?
So I don't know. I have to say, so we don't know, but I would guess that there's mostly confusion around this messaging because So what does that even mean? And what is Microsoft 365 and what does that give me? And you can kind of make this logical argument that Office 365 has benefits over the previous system where you would buy Office outright, you know, Office components outright. And that one of the nice things about Office 365, the example I would use, is now Microsoft knows that everyone who subscribes to this thing on the business side has Exchange, has SharePoint, has Skype for Business or whatever. And they don't have to worry about whether they only have some of those pieces of all of those products with the assumption that they're all together. You know, and there's kind of a nice thing to that. And maybe with Microsoft 365, that's a superset of what I just described. And now you have not only those Office components, but you have the security management stuff, and you have the Windows 10, at least Windows 10 Pro.
Hey, before we you notice something has changed. For those of you who are watching at home, we've now created a quad box for our new visitor. Peter Bright will join us a little later from Ars Technica, but joining us right now from The Verge, Tom Warren. Hi, Tom.
Hello. How are you?
So did you take a nap after the keynote, or...
I should have taken one during it. It was pretty dull.
So. Yeah. Well, maybe tomorrow. There's always tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's hoping.
So
we can be disappointed twice.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was going to say, we had talked about the way they'd split today's keynote into two parts. There was the vision part and whatever the hell the second part was. would you have eliminated one of those parts or just trimmed the whole thing down?
I think the second part could have been a day two one, really, and they could have had the Windows stuff today. That's the traditional way of doing things. But I think they just had Nadella speaking for far too long. It was weird. And he's like awkward joke at the beginning, and
yes,
it's hard to say no to the CEO if he says, "Well, I'd like to talk."
I know.
Yeah.
But there's a whole vibe that's emerged with Satya Nadella, I feel, right? That they're the save the world kind of company now. And he's got this high level vision about the good that Microsoft can do in the world, and it's weird to complain about it, but I feel like in a developer show in particular, you just kinda want to get to the thing.
Was it up to Nadella to do the Microsoft cares about you and the world and privacy? Was that his thing?
Yeah, I think so. The interesting thing about all of that is the whole privacy stuff is essentially, they obviously went after Google for that. We've screwed for quite quite a while there. But they also tried to monetize Windows with ads. They've tried to ads, and they just haven't made the money from it. So now they're like, hey, we're the privacy focused, security focused company.
Yep.
Like, oh, yep. Okay. So yeah, it's like it's a good message. It's on equal footing, I guess, with Apple's way of doing things. But it's not as if they haven't tried to do it the other way that, you know, Google, Facebook, etc. You know, that's the way they monetize their platforms. So, yeah. But, yeah, I feel like it's a repeated message, though. It's like they're really trying to drill into it, like the privacy and the security stuff. I don't get why they need to say it so much.
It's not anything new, is it? I mean, this is...
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like all of a sudden, oh, we care.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I get it with like the AI trustworthy initiatives and stuff around like the regulation around that, and but yeah, I don't get why it needs to be constantly hammered home every time. So and just for so long, like it takes up quite a big chunk of the keynote as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just was like, get to the stuff, like, come on. I thought they were gonna like open with the drone thing or something, you know, like a big opening where it was like exciting, and instead it just dragged on and on and on, and then it was like, okay, so it's the developer show. Even coding would have been better.
Yeah, and there was no Windows stuff to like make that dull period more interesting, because usually you sit there and you're like, ah, yeah, there's code demos, and ah, yeah, there's this and that, and you're like, you know, the devs love it, but like the general viewer doesn't. And then when the Windows stuff pops, it's like, oh, it's interesting, and like it kind of brings you back to life a little bit. But that really didn't happen today. The office meeting room thing, that was kind of interesting. That was cool.
That was actually cool. Yeah.
That was neat.
Yeah, so there was a demo, Leo, in the middle of this, like maybe like 2 hours in or an hour and a half in, where they showed this whole scenario of a meeting, like a concept video. It wasn't a video, a demo.
It was
of a
live,
meeting,
though, wasn't it? I saw
a meeting in the future.
I saw some coverage
really
of that.
Cool.
I think I saw Tom's article and I saw some tweets about it. And it was a very diverse work group from all over the world, right? This is Microsoft's Teams.
Right, it was Teams, and Cortana was part of it, and also ambient intelligence. So they showed this device in the middle that looked like
that,
a cone.
Yeah, what was that? The black cone.
It was a dunce hat.
Yeah.
It was a sorting hat. Yeah, it was
like a really funky polycon, essentially.
Yeah. But
oh,
they
okay.
built it. They built it to use it as like a prototype to show you, like, hey, if you had this kind of a device in here and you walked in and it said, hi, Tom, thanks for joining the meeting. And so it had like recognition and it had built in reminders through Cortana. I'm like, OK, see, that was interesting. And people couldn't like think about concepts when they see that. I thought they would have more of that. I was surprised they didn't.
Yeah, because you could stand on stage and talk about AI and quantum computing and, you know, like the future waves of computing and stuff. But to show it like that is, people can appreciate that, right? Like, you can understand it. Oh, okay, this is really clever. It's using certain learnings and stuff. And it's stuff that just you can connect with it more. And I think that, like, they need more of that today, really. They had the drone stuff. Yeah, whatever. The drone on stage is kind of, like, played out at this point.
Eric Duckman in our chat room says the real-time transcription was pretty cool.
It was.
Yeah. That was part of that, of the meeting demo. Yeah, and it was really accurate. It didn't really fail over at all. The only part of it that wasn't real was the your phone stuff. Like, they used, obviously, like a direct
clearly
video.
Clearly.
So tell us about that. What was the your phone thing? Is that a new app?
Yeah, it's essentially a new app. We don't really know exactly everything about it yet because they've been really thin on details and they're promising to demonstrate it further tomorrow. But essentially, it's going to connect definitely to Android devices and bring in your notifications from your Android device, your messages and your photos. And you'll be able to actually drag and drop those photos between the two. So you'll have the app on your PC and be able to, you know, send texts and back and forth with contacts and stuff without having to touch your phone. That's kind of like the idea behind it. So they've kind of been doing little bits of this through Cortana and various other apps that they've been trying out, even Skype at one point. But this is like a separate app now. So,
yeah. I'm excited about the picture thing because Paul knows. He sees me do this all the time. I take a picture on my phone, and then I email it to myself, and he's like, "Did you just email that to yourself?"
Yeah, there's still like that basic experience is still, you can use like Google Photos or OneDrive and stuff like that, but it's still, there's a little lag of like getting that photo. There's no like quick way of just taking a photo from your phone and getting it instantly on your PC.
Yeah.
So this could be interesting for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we'll see more about it tomorrow.
Oh, you know, the other interesting thing they did was the Cortana Alexa integration demo. I was actually surprised they did that. So, you know, we've been hearing that they were going to integrate Cortana and Alexa since last summer, and no one has really seen it work on the outside. I mean, there's people inside who are in the private beta or preview, but they showed it live on stage, and the way that you did it was surprising to me. I didn't know that Cortana would actually open on an Echo.
Yeah, so I guess it's slightly clunky in a way because you've got the way you've got to call it up because of the way that the both platforms kind of share different, shares similar sort of interactions. Like you can say, you know, hey Cortana, turn the lights on. You can say the same on Alexa. So you have to like call up Alexa or Cortana on each one to like activate it, and then the voice changes, and you know, you're talking to Cortana or you're talking to Alexa. I think it was an interesting demo. I don't know, like, how many people are really going to use Cortana for Alexa that much? But I mean, it does open up. It means that every Windows 10 PC now has Alexa built in, which is kind of interesting in a way. But it's a clunky way that you have to get to it. But yeah, I mean, it's just interesting that that pair are working together anyway. I'd like to see the integration go a bit deeper. I like Alexa and the skill set and stuff, but it would be nice if Cortana was just the, you know, the voice of Alexa. I can't imagine that ever happening, but it would be nice if it did. Because Microsoft's Cortana voice is obviously recorded by Jen, who was Cortana in Halo. And it's just a much better, it responds a lot better than Siri or Alexa. So. But yeah, it was an interesting demo, though. We'll see.
Anything else anybody wants to ask Mr. Warren while we have him?
Oh, what did you think of the HoloLens demo where they showed that remote assist, which is the hands-free video calling, and then they showed the layout thing, or talked about the Microsoft layout, where you can use HoloLens to design like 3D spaces in the work environment. I was actually happy to see them showing business scenarios again in HoloLens, because I think that's where it makes the most sense.
Yeah, I think like the remote assist scenario, like that was one of the original concepts behind HoloLens when they first demonstrated it. Was the Skype thing where you could like change a light bulb, like fix a light bulb with someone, you know, viewing your Skype session. And I think that's always been a really interesting way of using the mixed reality or, you know, augmented reality stuff. So yeah, I think it's interesting that they're pushing more towards the work scenarios because they've been gradually doing that over like the past year or so. And kind of trying to highlight like how different companies like Ford and people like that are using HoloLens. I'm still just curious like how many companies really are using it and like exactly what for. Like they do have a lot of these like flashy, you know, marketing videos where people are using it, but I'm still curious if people are actually using it and like using it to design and concept and stuff like that, because it does seem like that would, like the layout tools thing seems to fit that quite well, but the remote assist thing is like that's the thing that most impressed me with HoloLens, I think, throughout its life anyway. So we have a visitor.
I know.
Like, oh, everybody's looking in over their left shoulder.
The door just kind of creeped open. Listen, if it's a guy with a knife, this is over.
We're like the keynote's back.
We were all in the elevator like that. This morning, we all had to crowd into this elevator to get to the keynote. And it's like every Microsoft blogger is in there. And I'm like, wow, if something happens to this elevator, that's it. No more blogging.
To give you an idea of the intelligence of this crowd, we were in there for about 3 minutes. And then someone finally said, hey, should we hit one of the numbers on the panel?
Oh, Lord.
You know, usually the elevator just goes where I want it to go. I don't understand. Yeah,
it was a good moment for all of us.
It was an improvement from last year, though, when I was locked in a stairwell. So.
It's true.
Oh, right.
You got locked in a stairwell? What?
Yeah. Oh, we have like 10 minutes to go until the keynote. So, yeah, it was fun.
Help. I'm locked in a stairwell.
I was literally DMing people on Twitter to try and save myself.
Could somebody please unlock the door?
Will there be any product announcements at this event at all, or is it...
It's looking like probably not, huh?
I mean, there were product announcements. They just weren't the product announcements you wanted.
Well, Teams... Well, was there anything you'd not heard about?
We know that they're going to announce a new Surface Hub at some point. And I had speculated maybe this would be the time because they showed it off, but that before
no,
it
no,
built. But
no, no Surfaces at this event, for sure.
No.
It doesn't look like
but
it.
I'm fairly sure that they did show the Surface Hub 2 today.
By accident?
Yeah. No.
It's the one that was on stage with the prototype Polycom, like, whatever it was.
They just didn't say that's what it was.
Yeah, they didn't say what it was, but it seemed to be running like the Core OS. So,
interesting.
Yeah, could be interesting. Yeah. It seems like that scenario, that meeting room thing, is really set up for the Surface Hub. Whether it has like an external mic or not.
How about progressive web apps? This is my pet, my little pet these days.
Yeah, so nothing at all in the keynote. Tomorrow might be a better day for that because Windows 10 will be part of it. They are on the show floor. I ran into one of the guys I had interviewed last October on the show floor, but we had to bolt out of there because I was busy petting a donkey or whatever that was.
But that was your comfort animal, Paul, provided for your enjoyment.
But we had to get over here for the podcast, which, as you can see, has started about an hour and 15 minutes late regardless. So I guess that was time well spent.
So maybe tomorrow.
Yeah.
They have a session on PWA's.
And that's where you're going, isn't it? Because he said to me I should come to the session, and it was during the show.
It's like starting right now. Yeah.
Well, Tom, if you want to bug out, don't. Let us hold you up here.
I've got a session to go to in 25 minutes.
Oh, all right, we got time.
And that's going to be Windows new stuff in Windows Inc.
Oh,
so nice. That could be some news.
Windows Inc.
Yeah.
You know that thing that you never use?
I know what you're talking about. I have a pen. How about Linux for subsystem for Windows? How about anything new with the?
Well, no. I mean, the Windows stuff is all.
It's all going to be tomorrow. That's all going to be tomorrow.
Yeah, so the stuff they talked about today, briefly, Windows 10-wise, was Windows as a component of Microsoft 365, which we kind of already knew about, obviously. The cross-platform experience and stuff, which, like Tom was talking about, your phone. There's some other things around timeline on mobile devices. So if you have an Android phone or an iPhone, you'll be able to get some of your activities from those devices into your timeline and access them across devices, including Windows 10 PCs, right? Now, I think on Android, there's going to be an enterprise-compatible version of the Microsoft Launcher, which will have Timeline built into it. And on iOS, you'll be able to do that through the Microsoft Edge app. The idea there is that if you're browsing the web on your phone, you'll be able to see that activity on your Timeline on your Windows 10 PC later. So if there's something you wanted to kind of pick up on again, you'll be able to do that. But that is, I mean... Don't mind the sleeping bear. That is largely the kind of Windows 10 stuff, right? Yeah, I mean, Cortana stuff with Alexa and so forth.
They did say that 700 million devices are running Windows 10.
Well,
as it turns out. They actually hadn't updated that figure, so we're still at almost 700 million. But whatever, close enough. I think that's fine. The other thing is, you know, it sort of occurred to me in writing about the intelligent edge stuff that, you know, as Windows gets demoted to be, you know, one of the devices that can be in the intelligent edge, right? One of the devices that's smart enough to have AI local that doesn't have to hit the cloud to do things. It reminded me of that Apple strategy with the digital hub. Remember, the Mac used to be the middle of the circle. And at some point, they made iCloud the middle of the circle, and they demoted the Mac so that the Mac was just one of the devices you would use to access that content you had in iCloud. And in many ways, that's what this Intelligent Edge thing, it's Microsoft's version of that. You know, they're pushing Windows 10, which had been at the center of everything, And making it just one of the other device, you know, one of the devices, one of the clients on the edge.
They did talk a lot about AI, right? I mean, they talked about AI for accessibility, yeah. And I saw your article, Mary Jo, on Project Brainwave, and so there was some conversation about that.
See, Mary Jo, he got the name right.
Brainwave. Why? What'd you call it, Paul?
No, I was saying I didn't know we were supposed to call it Project Brainwave and not just Brainwave. Like, okay. I guess it's to imply, you know, it's still not really
it's
fully baked.
Like Project Kinect.
With a terrible name is what it implies.
I was really surprised that they announced something having to do with the Kinect. Didn't they kill the Kinect?
Yeah. That was so weird. The naming on that thing is weird, right?
Project Kinect for Azure.
Great. Well, essentially, it's the Kinect sensor or a better version of it.
Yeah, and the camera, right?
The camera, right? Yeah. Now it's tagged under Azure.
Right.
Yeah.
So the idea they want people to take this dev kit that's going to have sensors and the camera and build it into things and build around it, like especially IoT things, right? So, you know, like a drone that flies over a crop field would have this kind of a camera and all the processing capabilities to send it back to Azure and use all the services in Azure to process the data and do stuff with the data.
Was that the visual demo they did with Scott Gu and the Raspberry Pi where is it Scott or not? Was that Kinect technology?
No, I think that was the indexing server stuff, right? Like one of the cognitive services.
Yeah, we had a good time today, Leo. It was a real barn burner.
We can get Peter. I think we can get Peter on as well if you want to do that.
Okay.
So let me, Peter, if you'll go to your Skype machine, and while we futz around with that, let me mention our sponsor here. Okay. We'll have more. We're coming to you from Seattle, where Paul, Mary Jo, Tom Warren, and soon Peter Bright are going to talk more about the Build conference going on. Right now, our show today brought to you by Moogsoft. AI Ops is a platform for people who have to listen, have to wear beepers and listen for alerts. People like you, Alex. Would you like to reduce the noise?
Yes.
Yes. God, yes, he says. With all the alerts and tickets, lighten up your monitor like a Christmas tree. You know, it's just hard to be productive. You just get stressed out. But you know, you need these alerts, but no mere mortal can respond to all those tickets and analyze all those alerts. That's where AI Ops is great. Algorithmic IT Ops, it's a platform that reduces your IT alerts and tickets by up to 99% guaranteed. I was really trying while we were in Japan to get a video of a pachinko parlor because that's what it feels like, I think, when you're an engineer and you're getting all these alerts all at the same time. You just can't, you fritz, you can't respond. So what I was hoping, I wanted to do the part of the ad where for starting the pachinko parlor saying, is your life like this? And then go to like a Zen garden and say, it could be like this with Moogsoft's AI Ops platform. By the way, it integrates with all your existing IT tools. So you're not, it doesn't reduce alerts by reducing inputs. No, its patented technology correlates events into actionable work items. They call them situations. So you can focus on tackling the stuff that matters. I'll give you an example. There's a company called HCL Technologies. You may know their dry ice platform. They're a global IT managed service provider. And they've actually built Moogsoft AI Ops in as the event management layer with their award-winning dry ice platform. That means clients of HCL Technologies can streamline operational workflows, reduce time in the detect to correct lifecycle of incident tickets. They say, HCL says they experienced a 33% reduction in mean time to restore, which lets them support more customers with service quality while keeping operational costs low and efficiency high. Wouldn't you like to do that too? You can with Moogsoft AI Ops. AI Ops can reduce your alerts from and tickets by up to 99% right now, but you still get the job done. It's actually a lot of nice features besides what I've just talked about. Here's what you do. Go to Moogsoft, Moogsoft.com and get a demo. Moogsoft, Moogsoft.com. And if you're the person receiving the alerts, tell your boss, tell your manager, we need Moogsoft, please. Moogsoft.com. Get a demo. I think you'll agree. It's what you're looking for. Back we go. Let's see if I can turn up the volume here for
We're going to get Peter Bright in to join Tom Warren.
Tom skipped.
Man, I know. I gave him one moment to get out of here.
I know. He saw the light and he just ran for
it. I'm gone, man. But Peter Bright.
Can you blame him? I mean.
Well, if he just, the lights are so bright. Peter Bright from Ars Technica is here now. We're talking about the 3.5 hour keynote that these cats sat through earlier today. And what Microsoft brought.
Peter is a developer guy. He probably appreciates this stuff.
Did you? Was there a lot of stuff? A lot of good stuff for devs, Peter?
I think so. What I don't know is how much devs think that they're going to be able to use like this AI stuff in their day-to-day jobs. Because, you know, if you're like a web developer or doing line of business apps or whatever, are you rushing out to stick this stuff in your software? I just don't know. It does seem like it's becoming useful and enabling new kinds of applications that wouldn't have been practical before. It's not without value. I just wonder how much the kind of traditional Microsoft developer is going to be using it.
It makes me long for the days where Monkey Boy would run on stage and shout, "Developers, developers, developers."
We all long for those days.
I know.
Did you see, by the way, Ballmer sold his entire stake in Twitter?
Yep.
Yeah. He bailed.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
I did it.
All 4 shares. I think Steve had quite a bit more than that.
Yeah.
All right.
If you don't mind me asking, Peter, since you're here and we're going to grill you, this whole Intelligent Edge thing, you know, as the replacement for the client, as one way to bring forward, you know, Microsoft-centric developers to some kind of a new future that hopefully makes some sense. I mean, do you see this as a Microsoft strength? Is this a place they're going to be able to make a difference?
I think moving the machine learning workloads, particularly to the client devices, makes a lot of sense. And I think it'll be a good fit for many of these uses. Again, it's what I find difficult to see is how many Microsoft developers are going to be developing IoT style applications, for example.
Right.
Or it's that's the bit that seems tricky. But it feels like they're building a smart stack of software. And if that is your field, then it looks like it's going to be a comprehensive solution that's effective. So I don't know. I see what they're driving at. I don't know how applicable it will turn out to be.
Right.
I know, because the people who come to the show, like there's over 6,000 people registered, right? I would think the majority of people here are .NET developers still, right? And not necessarily people who would build for IoT devices, at least at this point in their careers.
Right. I agree.
And the message for them, by the way, did not factor in today's keynote at all.
It didn't.
And they announced this .NET Core 3.3 that's coming. Yep. In preview, but it's not shipping until next year.
I know.
And this is the release that will bring .NET Core to the desktop. So they're going to, add full desktop functionality on Windows only, right? So for Windows developers. But it's really far off.
Yeah. I mean, the preview is going to be this year, but this is what brings things that .NET developers know, like Windows right. Forms and Presentation Foundation, Presentation Framework, and UWP, XAML, all are coming to .NET Core. And .NET Core is the .NET version that runs across platform on Mac and Linux, right? So this is huge news. Maybe they're going to talk about this tomorrow in the keynote, but if I were Microsoft, this would have been like one of my top talking points for today, I would have thought. So I think it's interesting that, you know, they want to push this new future vision where they're having developers build for IoT devices, but you can't just suddenly expect everybody to drop everything that they've been working on and the way they've worked and the things they know. And suddenly it's like, hey, now you're going to start pushing AI workloads to edge devices. It's so different, I feel like.
Yep.
Every time I turn Peter's microphone on, it It sounds like a jet taking off.
Skype. That's right.
Is it Skype? Or I think it might be those.
I'm trying to adjust some settings. Probably my Apple headset isn't it?
Those things are awesome.
I think it's the fan in the Surface device.
Maybe it is. Who knows? Anyway, Peter is hovering inches above the floor.
Yeah, like a drone.
What else? There's got to be something of excitement.
Well, yeah, is Visual Studio Live Share.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Can you – and I have only the smallest understanding of what that is.
I think that's really awesome. They showed it at Connect last November.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much smarter than screen sharing because you can look at different places in the project. You can inspect variables in the debugger. It shares the state of the debug session and the programming session, but you're looking at whatever you want to look at. And yeah, you can follow the other person's cursor and see what they're looking at. But you can also think, oh, I want to just check this thing and look into that and do so without yanking control away from the other person and forcing them to look at what you want to look at.
So it's a live solution, a project or whatever. You've got two people with Visual Studio or Visual Studio code. So someone on a Mac could start a live session with someone who's working on something on Windows on full Visual Studio. They can go into different parts of the different source code files, make different changes simultaneously, I guess. Okay, so this is basically for programmers what live collaboration is on Word documents or whatever.
So it's I feel it's quite a nice solution for like pair programming, which is not universal by any means, but there are practitioners who think it's really valuable, particularly when you have a experienced developer and a less experienced developer.
It's all the rage right now.
It feels like a really good idea, good way of asking a colleague for help, just in general, because it's way less intrusive. You know, you don't have to walk to the other person's desk. You don't have to screen share and use their horrible editor settings. Well, you know, these are things that are really important to developers, like the color scheme you have for your code highlighting and the fonts you use and things, and just the layout of all the paint in your development environment. They're actually really personal. And if you use someone else's development environment, it's like you're lost. Where's that button? Where's that part of the debugger? I don't know, because it's not laid out the way I have it. So actually being able to use your own layout and your own system while still cooperating with someone else is really valuable. So I think it's really neat. I think it's quite limited to start off with. I think it will do certainly the case in November when I talked to them about it, like you couldn't do C++, I think, because there are these things they call language services, and I think there's one for JavaScript/TypeScript, and I think there might be one for C#. And that's kind of how they communicate with each other.
So they might add those things over
time. Yeah, I mean, it's possible that it's been evolved since then. C++ would certainly be nice to have.
So the old-fashioned way of doing this, screen sharing, this is not a feature of Visual Studio. This is something you would get through Skype or Windows or something. In other words, you would use whatever. Is that right? This is an ad hoc thing. So now this is a built-in feature of Visual Studio. Okay.
Yeah.
And where is it documented if people want to use it? Somebody's asking in the chat room.
That's a good question.
nowhere to be found.
I saw them post it.
It's probably in the Microsoft's developers site, right? I mean,
yeah, there's code.visualstudio.com/video-studio-live-share. I'm sure there's an easier place to get it, but
do you have to have the full Visual Studio to do it, or what, does it work with code as well? Or
it works with code also.
Nice. See, that's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
the kind of feature you might not put in your free version.
Right. In other words, the web-based developer on the Mac or whatever using Visual Studio Code can still use this sharing feature to look at say a C# project or whatever it might be on Visual Studio.
Yeah.
And they did say that there will be free versions for both dev environments.
Yeah.
Today also. So there's going to be a completely free version. Then there'll probably be paid tiers also of it. But yeah.
It makes sense. I mean, it's Microsoft's goal, obviously, to get developers excited about using Microsoft tools. Mm-hmm. And, maybe they'll get some benefit of them developing for Windows as well. But I think that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know what the monetized tiers would be. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, what more would you get? C++.
I figure it's going to just be free and built in. And
you get to pay if you want C++.
C++ and fourth. If you want fourth, you got to pay.
Their FAQ says something about paid tiers, but it doesn't explain. Right, explain why how. But
Right.
So that extension is available live now, so to speak.
In preview as of today.
So it doesn't require some future version of Visual Studio. It's just something that plugs into the current version.
It might require you to use the Visual Studio preview channel.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. What else? Was there anything else stick out for you in today's keynote?
So, I think the App Center GitHub integration was neat. A really straightforward, obvious thing to do because... hey, I want the continuous integration testing that App Center does, but I'm using GitHub already.
Right. So this is not App Center's been around for a year, but it's now on GitHub.
Yeah. So before App Center would be driven from VSTS, I think, and now you can drive it from GitHub instead.
VSTS team server.
Team service or whatever. Yeah, Visual Studio Team Systems Service.
The cloud version is.
The cloud version of what was it? TFS. You commit your code in GitHub, that sends the event off to App Center, that pulls your code, builds it, runs the tests.
If you set up a little bit, devices, Paul, I could just get you right, get Peter's head on your head. Yeah, there you go. I'm sorry. Okay, that's just too weird. I'm not going to do it. Won't do it. Can't do it. Nope.
This is one of the things they got with Xamarin. And it seems like a really solid, sensible service. I was talking to Nat and a guy from GitHub whose name I can't remember. Sorry. Obviously they won't commit to sort of future products or anything like that, but they can imagine that this kind of integration may not be just for mobile apps in the future.
Right, of course.
You could imagine GitHub and VSTS being integrated more generally for your non-mobile projects.
I really like this new Microsoft because they're really reaching out to the mainstream coder who's not a Windows coder, who uses GitHub. We were talking earlier about how kind of interesting and cool it was to see Miguel de Acasa talking for Microsoft. But they're smart to hire people like him and Mark Rusinovich, and I'm sure there's other names as well, because it adds a cool factor to developing for Microsoft. I think it's a good idea. This is what Microsoft seems to me has been doing for the last few years, is moving toward users instead of saying users come to us.
That was a big motive behind this. Like, they know that there are many people who have GitHub, even private repositories, and that's where their project is. That's what their company is using. And those people are probably perfectly happy with GitHub and used to the workflows in GitHub. And it makes sense to say, okay, even if you're using GitHub and happy with GitHub, we'd still like to have some money for using App Center. Like, if you pay us that money, that's good. And we don't want to have this barrier in the way of you giving us the money of saying, oh, no, you've got to bring your source over to our system. Just keep it where you're happy with it and give us the money anyway.
Did they talk at all about TypeScript? That's their... kind of JavaScript implementation.
I don't think they said anything about it.
Not in the keynote. I happened to catch, they were throwing up a Channel 9 interview with Anders. They were talking about TypeScript, but...
I think there are sessions about it.
What would you say Microsoft's big initiative is then? If it's not progressive at web apps...
Well, big initiative where, right? So, I mean, obviously in the cloud... The developer story is the stuff we already talked about. It's the intelligent cloud, intelligent edge. It's Azure services hitting a variety of device types that can, in many cases, do onboard machine learning and AI. But as far as traditional client development goes, you know, I mean, Xamarin's still around for mobile, I guess. You know, it's that's kind of their story. I don't think that anything's really changed there. But as far as, you know, rich client PC stuff, you know, UWP is still a thing. PWA is a thing. They're looking at this Microsoft 365 thing. And that one is one of those things when you kind of do the math on it, it doesn't really add up. You know, there's 700 million Windows 10 active, let's call them users out in the world, roughly. There are 135 million commercial Office 365 subscribers or active users, whatever it is, out in the world. When you combine those groups, you know, you don't add those together. It's a cross-section, right? So there's only some segment of those that are Microsoft 365 subscribers. So the Microsoft 365 subscriber base as sort of an addressable market is kind of on the small side. You know, it's meaning that what the thing where you can guarantee, and there's no story there today, but let's just pretend in some future version, if you have Microsoft 365, you know that you have, you know, the Windows piece, the security piece, the management piece, and the Office 365 piece, whatever that might be. That is not a very big audience.
But I think the other piece we're forgetting about is Office Graph. And they talked, now called Microsoft Graph.
Oh,
and they talked a little about that today. But that's so when you think about developing for Microsoft 365, what they're really trying to get you to do is to write things that plug into the Microsoft Graph, which is a centralized API that they have. And they're counting on people doing this as a way to basically get their apps to work without all these interim steps, right? So they've integrated a lot of their own apps already into the Microsoft Graph. And Project Roam, remember that? That's part of Windows, is integrated into the Microsoft Graph. Teams is integrated into the Graph, and Planner. So I think you're going to see more and more third-party apps and Microsoft apps and services tie into that. And that, I think, when they say developing for Microsoft 365 is going to be a big part of that pitch.
I think Paul is thinking of it in the wrong way, actually.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, okay, they'll say you're a Microsoft 365 developer, but that doesn't mean that your application has to depend on Windows, has to depend on mobile device management, has to depend on Office 365 and all the other bits. You can build an application that is just a Windows application, but which sticks stuff into the graph so it can show up on timeline and things like that. And that's a Microsoft 365 application, but it'll run on any Windows 10 machine.
Yeah, so actually, as she was speaking earlier, I had to go look this up because I think you're right. The other piece of this, and I'd sort of come to it as well, was that it's not just the number of the devices, right? It's the data. And in the blog post that Frank wrote, I'll just read from it because there's no way I would ever remember this. But he said, by 2020, the average person will generate 1.5 gigabytes of data per day. A smart home will generate 50 gigabytes per day. And a smart city, 250 petabytes of data every day. And so when you add that with that's the real thing. It's the data, you know. And in other words, AI by itself is meaningless. It needs data, and that's something you'll get with Microsoft Graph. That's not the addressable market, but I mean, it's kind of speaks to the amount of data and how important it is to have technology that can work against that data.
Yeah. Whether they can make this exciting, I don't know.
Exciting is a different story. you know, whether it's going to be, you know, the successful one, you know, I don't know. But Microsoft has, you know, they talk up security as they should. They trustworthy computing is, you know, almost coming up on 20 years, I think. It's been a while. The security piece is a huge thing with Azure Sphere. They're talking about privacy and security and humanity and the whole notion that AI is sort of like the Isaac Asimov, you know, laws of robotics thing. Like, we need to have a moral kind of background to this stuff. And it's interesting, you know, and I think, I have the quote. I'll just read this too. I'm sorry. I would not remember the exact quote, but Satya Nadella said today on stage that we need to ask ourselves not only what computers can do, but what computers should do. And so they're starting to push that notion of basic human rights and social responsibility and, you know, that kind of aspect of it, which, of course, is apparently Satya Nadella's wheelhouse. I mean, it seems like he exists solely in that area.
I think those questions are astonishingly irrelevant. If we had true general purpose AI, then yes, there are all sorts of questions about, like, hey, we've got an actual intelligent being here, and, like, what do we want to let it do? What rights does it have? Yeah, all sorts of questions there. Yeah. These are the systems we have right now are all machine learning, sort of very data centric systems. Mm-hmm. They definitely raise questions, but they're not the kind of grand AI questions.
Profound questions.
No, I don't think so. They're the sort of questions on, well, is it okay to do sort of racial profiling and that kind of question? And yeah,
self-driving cars, right? You know, one of the technologies that they try to build into these things is don't kill people. You know,
yeah,
it's not presented as a moral quandary, but it's, you know, the idea is if you have to choose between hitting a person and hitting a wall, hit the wall, you know, that type of thing. That kind of falls into that.
Yeah, I just felt like it was the wrong audience for this message. I really did. Yeah. I know they realize that a lot of different press and some people in the general public will be watching this and probably want to hear some of that. But I felt like it's a developer show. There's 6,000 developers sitting here, right? And we're talking about ethics of AI. I know it's important. And
it's
all
also
that,
the reality of the situation, right? So most of these guys can't even get ahead of the fact that they're running line of business apps on Windows XP or something that are so out of date, they're ridiculous. And you're talking about, like, I'm creating a robot brain for some future, solution that's just never going to happen.
I'm also reminded that the most recent Stack Overflow developer survey, it had some questions about the morality of AI. And my recollection is that most developers said, yeah, it's not my problem. It's ultimately management's problem.
Yeah, in other words, that's a decision that occurs far above me.
Yeah. And if I write a program that's completely immoral in some way, the developer says, yeah, you know, I'm a bit responsible, but not that much.
That's what the Nazis said, too.
I'm just following orders.
You both went there. You both broke God with law simultaneously.
Yeah.
Broke it. Lived up to it.
I guess I feel like the audience would have rather have heard like mundane details about like conversational bots and stuff than about the ethics of AI.
So,
I mean, they've done that in the past. I'm not sure the bot thing went over too big. That was, maybe that was Ignite or whatever.
I think it was Build a couple years ago. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like it was a weird jumble of things in this keynote and presented in a very unusual way. Like, normally you'd see them do a bunch of demos and talk a lot of stuff about coding and tools, and then at the end, Satya Nadella comes on for 15 minutes.
And have kind of wrap it together into a theme.
Instead, it was like 45 minutes of kind of high talk.
By the way, Peter was one of these people. I think Brad was, too. When Satya Nadella completed, they started getting up, and it's like, no, this is the halfway point. And it was like,
oh my God.
Right? I mean, it was 90 minutes in, and we're like, great, that we were done. This is fantastic. Like, no. You know, there's a lot more to come. I agree, he should have come on at the end.
But then everybody would have left.
It was so long, we had to do yoga in our seats and have a stretch break.
So I thought people were joking when they said there was an exercise break. There really was. Oh, my God.
No, we put our left foot in. We put our left foot out. We did the hokey pokey.
You did the hokey pokey?
Yeah.
We shook it all about.
What if it really is what it's all about?
Well, Mary Jo did not do the yoga. Mary Jo gave me the finger.
I think she gave me the double finger, in fact.
I was shocked.
Mary Jo Foley.
I was exercising my wrists.
Yeah. I had to get my middle fingers
a little rotation. Yeah. You know, the little thing that's a good exercise.
You know, when you use notes, to Microsoft Notepad to write your columns, it takes you got to really pay attention.
Exactly.
I welcomed the chance to stand up and stretch.
It was good.
I wish they'd let us get drinks and stuff and had a real break because I was so thirsty.
Well, here's a thought. What if you made keynotes you didn't have to have exercise breaks in?
Well, that's an
excellent point.
It's an interesting concept.
I guess that's one way of doing it.
I mean,
but actually, that gets to the like the thing I find strange. Ignite is a full week.
Yeah,
this is too short, is what you're saying. Yeah, they have to jam it into a small amount of time.
And actually, if they'd made the event longer, it would have made sense to have 3 days of keynotes.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, you can only speculate why that was is the case. Yeah. But right, why wouldn't it be the full week? I wonder if it's too expensive. Just maybe they don't perceive the value of sending developers out of town for that long. Yeah, I don't know.
But you send your IT guys?
Yeah, no one misses them when they're gone. You know?
You pay your developers more, so you feel that investing in them would make more sense. I don't know. It's always strange to me.
Well, I mean, from the outside looking in, if you're going to send developers to build, you're sending them there not to learn about trust and privacy. You're sending them there to learn about tools and technologies, right?
You know, Brad and I walked around the show floor, and we went up into where the sessions are and everything. This place is packed. It is packed full of people. And there was some speculation that was wrong, beforehand, that this thing hadn't sold out immediately and previous shows had. And we know the reason why is just because Microsoft allotted the tickets differently this time. They used to let internal groups take them up front, and then they would dribble them back out as they got everyone on their teams in and didn't need the additional tickets. This time they allowed people externally to get the tickets right away, and so it seemed like it didn't sell out quickly, but this place is packed.
Well, it should be. Did they talk about developing for 1803? Is there anything unique about developing? Or they'll probably do that tomorrow, huh?
Yes, nothing.
Nothing. Timeline.
But I have to wonder what the impact is on the average developer of years and years of change and initiatives that kind of didn't quite go anywhere. And now, but trust us, this time, this is the one kind of thing. And do you have a handle on that?
There's a reason that .NET Core 3 next year is still going to support WinForms.
Yeah.
Because the devs, yeah. They'll stick with, hey, this worked. Going to stick with that,
right.
I'm sure it's frustrating in some ways, but yeah, they haven't all ridden every wave,
right.
So yeah, there'll be a bunch of developers who are writing WinForm apps. I'm sure there'll be a bunch writing WPF apps, and then some one or two writing UWP apps, and it's kind of I think they haven't sort of followed every. Right. Initiative slavishly, and it's like
I didn't mean that they followed it, but rather they saw, okay, this year it's this thing. Well, this year it's this thing. I remember Silverlight? We were kidding about Silverlight. No, this year it's this thing.
I'm sure there'll be like a bunch who get on it, and then a bigger bunch who just say, yeah, this is just their latest thing. They won't last. I'll stick with what I know.
Right. Yeah. Don't worry if Fluent or whatever doesn't work on your Win32 app. It will next year. That kind of thing.
Anything else? What else? Come on.
We were so beaten down today, Leo.
I know. I feel it.
Yeah. There's a lot. I thought some of the stuff they were doing around field programmable gate arrays.
FPGAs.
Was interesting because they're starting to open it up now so that some external developers can get access to Microsoft's FPGAs in Azure, so that if you have an AI workload, you can run it there in Azure and get access to it. Or now you can also do it on the edge by buying a server and accessing it, like downloading some things to the server and then accessing. Why is that word so hard to say?
Is this a response to Google's TPUs? Tensor processing.
I think they even said they crushed the performance of GPUs, but I think they said also they're crushing the TPUs. I think
really because the TPUs are hefty little doohickeys.
But again, another thing where it's interesting to some people who are already thinking about AI workloads and how do I take advantage of the cloud and use the cloud to process my workloads either on the edge or centralized. Mm-hmm. But other developers who are still thinking about like Windows Forms, do they care about that? No.
Yeah. I'm really bad at names. I was talking to some
guy,
Microsoft dude.
Yeah. dude.
Yep. I know that guy.
So just at all of these events, Microsoft has this weird thing. Like
You have the keynote and all the embargoes and things that they were at 8:30 this morning, and then you have interviews with the people who are telling you about the stuff you've already written up and published about. And it's like, well, that would have been great if it had happened last week, and I could have actually put it in the thing I wrote this morning.
That's a good point.
But it happened too late. So I was talking to him about the AI, machine learning stuff. Not AI, never AI, machine learning. And he wasn't going to get into pricing, but he said that actually, in vague terms, we can expect these, maybe these FPGAs or things comparable to them, or you know, high performance accelerators for these machine learning workloads to become quite widespread quite quickly. And actually a lot of these tasks will probably end up getting pushed to the client device, including, so that they're starting with the image recognition, because that's a really straightforward one and it makes a lot of sense to do it in the client devices. But soon, you know, within a few years, we should be doing all the sort of speech recognition and speech generation and translation, all these other things feasibly within the client device as well. And that means that they can run offline, which means all of a sudden some of the sort of privacy concerns, for example, that people have might evaporate. You know, like there's a lot of concern if you're talking to Cortana or Alexa or whatever it may be. Every damn thing you say goes up to the cloud, because that's where the recognition is done.
Right.
That may not be the case in a few years. They may not have to do that. They may be able to have these same high-quality engines running in the endpoint. And yeah, if you're saying search the web, that'll have to go to the cloud. But if you're just saying turn on my lights,
right,
it may not. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's interesting stuff being done here. And I can see for some kinds of application, it's makes a huge difference. Like, so I was talking to some people from I think the company is called Iris, and they do a thing that looks at photographs of your retina to see if you've got diabetic retinopathy, to see if you're going to go blind. And like they have this service so that your regular physician can take a photo of your eye, send it to their service, and like 37 seconds later it'll say yes, refer this person to an ophthalmologist because they need a closer investigation, or no, it looks fine. And you couldn't do that kind of service without the machine learning system, because you need a ton of trained humans,
right,
sitting in some shed somewhere, you know, trained medical, yep, professionals to look at all these damn pictures, and you know it just would never work.
What happens actually every day? That's how those services are today.
Yeah. But you know, it wouldn't be cost effective and available, right, to widely. Yep. And so, like, these things are actually really exciting because they're applications that probably wouldn't be built otherwise, and couldn't be built otherwise.
Or would just be super expensive.
Or be super expensive, yeah. And not, you know, this organization's goal is to end preventable blindness, and you can't achieve that without having really wide reach, low prices. It wouldn't exist without this kind of thing. So, you know, that, I think that kind of thing is kind of exciting. These new applications are kind of exciting. I still definitely sense, if, hey, I'm writing a line of business apps, why do I care?
And that's
yeah, really straight. And you know, in a lot of ways, the line of business development hasn't it's in much the same shape as it was in the mid-1990s.
Mm-hmm.
The tooling is certainly better, but it's, you're writing the same apps, mm-hmm, in the same kind of way, and it's like,
right, yeah,
and that's how we like it.
Yeah. and it's so it's just this weird disconnect.
I don't use languages that don't have line numbers.
Yeah.
Oh wait, speaking of line,
yes,
what,
how did we not mention this? Notepad now includes support for Linux line endings.
Ooh.
Oh yeah. In the inside build.
You had me at CRLF. Ooh.
I gotta say, Unix line endings make no damn sense.
Are they just line feed? Are they line feed by themselves?
The Windows carriage return line feed makes sense because you need a carriage return
and a line feed.
And the line feed to move up.
And then
you can't have one or the other. Like
Linux is just line feed, right?
Yeah. And classic Mac was just carriage return.
Just CR,
And it's like, yeah, okay, you scrolled up a line, but your print head is still way off that.
But Peter,
that makes no sense.
We're not working on linotypes anymore. And really, it doesn't matter as long as you have a defined character that ends a line. It doesn't actually move anything back to the beginning of the line and roll the platen up. You're wasting bytes, my friend.
Valuable bytes. I've got lots of terabytes of this space. I can take.
Really, the only issue is that there are three different kinds of line endings. That's the real issue. Is just pick one, guys. Anyone would be fine.
Yeah. The Windows way is best. And the Unix way will
prepare. That's why we have three, Peter, because of people like you. Windows way is best. Give me a break. Hey, this is like the Brady Bunch. I like this.
No, I mean, I heard someone, a friend of mine was complaining recently that Amazon is trying to sell them some dot matrix printer with continuous paper.
What?
You know, the tractor feed with the perforated holes down the side. So clearly carriage return and line feed still matters. Because that's
holy cow. Well, yes, except that your print driver could say, oh, CR, I must do an LF as well.
Maybe.
It's not that hard. And if bytes don't matter, why does Word continue to encode text in this bizarre 4-bit format? I ask you.
I don't know what that is.
Microsoft giveth. Oh yeah, because they don't use standard. Well, maybe they do now. They didn't used to use ASCII or even Unicode. What? Yeah, they would. What? You would take a Word file. This is probably old hat now.
Are you talking about Outlook saying J when you write a smiley and that kind of thing?
No. They would say, "Oh, we can encode that W in 4 bits."
What?
Yes.
Never heard this.
Well, that's because you never got deep inside the Windows Word, Microsoft Word file format.
No.
If you ever did.
I had better things to do with my time. Like,
well, what happened is you don't have
better,
a uniform.
Based on my understanding of his life. But.
You don't have a uniform bit.
Ow. I could be playing Dota 2, Paul, instead of reading Word documents. And actually,
I'm probably dating myself by saying that. I hasn't done that in 20 years, but.
Yeah. Text them out these days, Leo.
I haven't used a teletype in 20 years either, so no line feeds for me.
I don't know, maybe you should get a dot matrix printer. Maybe you just like relive that glory.
If you worked at an airline,
I still know what burst and decollate means.
None of us do.
I do not. Yeah.
Really? You don't know what burst and decollate means?
No.
So when you get your tractor feed paper, you burst it to break off the tractor feed heads, and you decollate it to put it in order. Burst and decollate is what you do with that tractor feed crap.
Yeah.
You deal with the white dust.
Then next week we'll talk about punch cards. Punch card weekly. I really want to talk about 1803, but I guess we just can't till next week.
Yeah, sorry.
It's out. People are getting it. Is it reliable? This is the – by the way, they didn't call it the spring update. They just called it the
– April 2018 update.
Which is good. I'm glad.
Agree. I think it was good they came to their senses on the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been hearing a lot of problems with this build.
Really? Man.
Yep.
It's been a problem. Not everybody, but a significant number of people having problems.
It's higher than it was in the past.
And surprising. You don't really need it, right? Because unless you use Timeline.
Well, no, the issue isn't of need. You're on Windows 10. You're going to get
it. Well, that's my point. They make you update for to get something you don't need.
Yeah.
And it breaks a lot things. I'm on 1803 on here. This is the Lenovo T470S. I got it on my Yoga as well. Well, ironically, did not yet get it on my Surface.
That's interesting. So, if you did you search for it?
No.
Are you a seeker, Leo?
I was not a seeker.
Oh, he didn't hear this last week about seekers, right?
What?
So Microsoft introduced this concept that wasn't there before, where if you actually go to Windows Update and you look to see if you have an update, you're just going to get 1803. And that didn't happen before.
Then I am a seeker.
Is it a sucker?
Like, I knew it didn't do it automatically, but every machine where I manually check, it's always given it to me. I assumed it always worked like that. Is that new? No, it didn't.
No, and in fact, I'm manually checking on the HPX2, NVX2. It's not updating. I looked on the Surface Studio. It's not updating. You know, and I went into updates to see if there's an update.
I have it on every machine I've looked for it on. Everyone.
Really?
So if you do that, you're a seeker. And if you don't, last week we said you were a stoner, but that's not a Microsoft term.
How about a sucker?
But the irony here is, Mary Jo, that both seekers and stoners are the same.
I know, because they're seeking
something.
They're both something.
Looking for drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I don't think that's true, because I went to the Surface Studio and by seeking, you mean opened Windows Update, right? Check for updates.
Check for updates.
And that's seeking.
No, what I'm saying, I'm not, okay, I'm sorry. It doesn't mean you will automatically get it then. If you still have to be on the white list, you know, there's still that system, but the, but that isn't how this.
So what it's saying is, it won't push it. It won't say you have an update. Actually, I did. No, I saw a nice little pop-up saying, wow, new stuff is here.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
That's not a seeker. That's a
sucker.
You
shouldn't know. That's a sot.
But tomorrow is Patch Tuesday.
Right. So we might all become seekers tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, tomorrow.
They're going to start pushing it on Windows Update tomorrow.
They will start pushing it.
Yeah, pushing it, because that's what seekers and stoners both want, pushes.
Now I'm really tempted to run into the other room and see if my Surface Studio has it.
Right.
But also, we are thinking they're going to fix, like, put out a cumulative update to fix some of these issues tomorrow. Right?
Probably.
I didn't seek this. Somebody brought me Windows 1803 on a USB drive. I'm not a seeker. I'm a sucker.
That's
you're a sucker. No, I have it on everything. I just wanted to. Actually, Alex, is the Surface Studio set up? Would you see if 1803 is being offered? Because I sought it yesterday, but I did not get it. So you're saying that by seeking it, you may trigger it the next day.
Do you have to seek it after Patch Tuesday?
I don't know.
Is the seeking behavior
does it change?
Acting it up right now? Or does it
we don't
change
know. I mean, this has never happened before.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have it, even though my Surface Studio did freeze. So I got all the benefits of 1803 without actually downloading it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That was a freebie.
Yeah. I don't know. 1803 is mostly okay for me so far.
Yeah, I haven't. It has been unremarkable on my Lenovo's. I don't see any difference. There's a new icon for the desktop switching thing.
Right. Task view.
Task view, is that what they call it? And it has a new display too, doesn't it? I mean, it's got some icons at the top, and it looks more like a Mac. Yeah.
This is the timeline display.
That's timeline. Okay.
Timeline seems quite handy.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. What is it doing?
I would like.
Is it different from desktop organization? I don't.
Yes.
So when you're scrolled at the top, it's just the same desktop organization. It's when you scroll down and you go back in time and you see your old things.
I apparently have no old things.
If you click a link and it launches your default browser, that goes into timeline. If you have any application that has a most recently used list of files, that should go into timeline, I think, and automatically. If you're using Edge, then I think individual web pages or maybe individual tabs go into timeline. I couldn't quite tell. But one thing that doesn't go in, so if you use Chrome, then the individual pages and tabs don't go into timeline because Chrome isn't telling timeline.
Oh, another reason not to use Chrome.
If you use Chrome and you click a link in an email and it opens Chrome, that will go into timeline because the system sees that because it sees, you clicked a link, I'll launch the default browser. But anything that happens within Chrome stays within Chrome.
Here's something a little confusing.
And I hope that changes.
When I hover my mouse over that new button, it says task view, not timeline.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is timeline.
The interview is the interview. The interface is task view. But there's a feature in there now called Timeline gives you the task view from previous time periods.
Yeah, because there's this little scroll thing on the right. It doesn't go anywhere because I guess
it's also the interface for virtual desktops for some reason.
Yeah, that's what I see, and that's what I just assumed. Oh, this is just virtual desktops. Okay.
So the aside from the obvious, you know, Timeline, if you have multiple PCs, you should be able to see tasks from your other computers and with devices.
Well, let me go look at the Surface Studio now. I really want to know.
I use Edge on Android, for example, and my tabs from Edge on Android show up.
Yeah, that's neat.
This is nice.
Leo is now checking on the Surface Studio.
Yep. He's like, I want to see.
I bet he has it.
I do too.
I've been surprised by how many PCs get it. All you do is look and it just comes down.
I know. I'm not looking. I've consciously not looked.
It's kind of, I mean, I'm, you know, like a lot of nerdy types probably check Windows Update from time to time for some reason. It's always like a Defender update or something. But I do it kind of compulsively, and I ended up downloading it everywhere. My wife's that new computer that she started using this weekend. We had to wait to configure it because it was downloading 1803.
So you broke your wife's new computer is what you're saying?
Yeah. Yep, welcome to Windows 10.
Yeah.
See, what the first thing she had, we got to Seattle, and she was using it on the bed, and she turned the laptop around, and she pointed at the screen, and she said, how do we get rid of this white thing? And this white thing was the Cortana search box. And I said, well, I mean, you can get rid of it, but she's like, yeah, I don't like it.
But it's actually good, like, I type stuff in there to search for it.
So I leave it on the desktop, but honestly, you can still just hit start and type.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't lose too much by not having the box. All right, survey says.
Survey says, yes, having seeked, I now suck. It was 1709 yesterday. I checked for updates. I didn't say anything was there. I now checked for updates today, and it says 1803 is downloading. So that's what you're saying is that's what's supposed to happen different. Is that by seeking.
So if you show that active interest in your updates,
This is new.
Wait a minute. Don't people check updates periodically, or is that
they
done?
Never do.
Most people let it happen automatically.
Never.
Yeah.
They don't think about
I only do when I get a notification saying, hey, you need to restart your PC to blah, blah, blah. Then I'll be like, maybe I should check my updates.
It would be weird because I would have checked for updates 18 times before it ever could say something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
I always check for updates. I mean, because it's not just Patch Tuesday. I mean, there are other things that get updated, definitions and stuff.
Update on a Surface device at any time.
Anytime, anywhere. Well, I learned that. It's probably where I learned that behavior is when I have that Surface book that got new firmware every moment, every day.
They'll get it right eventually.
All right. So regular people are not seekers.
Yeah. No.
But if you are interested, you could do that.
By the time a lot of people hear this, it's going to be Tuesday or later, and now
they will get it. They will get it tomorrow. Okay.
Now they'll probably get. Microsoft's okay about it now. They'll throw up a little dialogue or a big window actually, but it will explain what's happening and gently guide you through the process.
and the process does feel quicker with the new.
Yeah, it's not
install.
Bad.
Because they do more of it up front.
Yeah,
It's funny. Not bad. It actually takes a bit longer because
right. It's
doing it while they're still using the computer, but the time during which a computer is useless is way reduced.
Yep.
And
that's right.
That's
now,
welcome.
Would you recommend, given the problems, Mary Jo, you were referring to, would you recommend that people defer?
No.
I would say wait for the cumulative update, which probably is tomorrow.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a patch tomorrow. But
I mean, it's likely and hopeful that as of tomorrow, they'll have fixed the issues and it should be okay.
See, I managed to derail this show from all of the fascinating build talk.
Yeah. No, Leo, I would say before that, this show was right on target the whole
time.
So
good. It was so good. And I ruined it by talking about something people actually care about. Mm-hmm. Shame on me.
No, but you know what? You weren't here last week when all this started happening.
No, I missed the Seeker.
You needed to catch up on that.
Missed the Seeker story. Yeah. That's true. I mean, this is not new for you guys. This has been out for a week. Yeah.
This has been the hell we've been living with, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. April 2018 update for Windows IoT. Will we see that tomorrow as well?
It's already out.
Oh, yeah, April. Oh, yeah, that. Remember, yeah. I'm still on Tokyo time where it's actually March.
Yep.
Yeah. No, Tokyo's ahead.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Yep. Are they in June? Is that how that works?
They're in June. Yeah, they're a month ahead. They crossed the international month line.
Month line. It's a big planet.
Wouldn't that be cool if you had such a big planet that you had to have 31 international date lines?
And actually, Peter introduced a kind of math like that to me today. He said that because he came here from the East Coast, which is a 3-hour time change, and he said, I'm still going to bed on East Coast time, but I'm waking up on West Coast time. And I said, did you lose 6 hours of sleep?
It's been hot.
Oh, well, try going to Japan and coming back and doing a show. Let me tell you.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But it's not – I think it's not as bad going that way, at least for a Californian.
Yeah. It wasn't for me either. Going that way was easy.
Yeah.
Coming back.
Yeah. Coming back has not been good. Yeah. But
I love going west. I turned into a morning person.
No, I agree. I woke up particularly early after going to sleep particularly late last night.
That's good. Lucky you didn't travel like 5 time zones. You would have gotten up before you went to bed.
Yeah. That's what happened when I flew back from Japan. We left Saturday at 1 p.m. and got home at 2:30 p.m.
That's not bad. 90 minutes. That's good.
Yeah.
If you do that enough, you'll get younger.
Had we not had that layover, I might have been able to get here before I left.
And you could make mistakes again.
Or you could tell yourself what not to do when you went on the trip.
We were in a 787 with those new giant windows that automatically polarize or dim, and that was pretty cool too. At one point, Michael, our son, said, look, the sky is purple. And I said, no, that's just the new 787, son.
It's Dreamliner.
That's the Dreamliner. The purple skies. Actually, I didn't. I said, because I didn't realize. So I said, purple mountains, majesty, fruited plains. You see any fruited plains out there? Anything else you guys want to talk about?
More Seeker living than stoners. Yeah, it sounds like
Seekers, stoners, and suckers.
You know who came up with that, which is funny?
Father Andre. Robert. Of course he did. No, you didn't even have to tell me that. I totally recognize that's Father Robert's humor. Yeah. Just because a man takes the cloth doesn't mean he's not a man.
Wow.
I will take your word on that, Leo.
I don't know what that means, and I hope it doesn't mean what I think it means.
I think it does.
Come on. Anything else? Anything else from Build, or should we wrap this puppy up?
Oh, one more thing.
Yeah, there are puppies at Build. Yeah, we talked about
there were puppies and ponies. Puppies and ponies. Yeah.
Anyone who's listening to the show right now, tomorrow night is our meetup.
Oh, let's talk about it.
Tomorrow night meaning Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, 6 till 8 p.m.
And what country are you in, Paul? I guess you're right. Walk. If you're listening to the podcast at a later date, you might go to the wrong time. What is the name of it? The Pine Cloth?
The Pine Box. It's a former mortuary turned into a craft bar.
Oh, my God. Only in Seattle. Oh, my God.
It's on Capitol Hill. It's walking distance from the convention center, and it's open to anyone. No RSVP. Just come. That's it.
Pine Box. What time again?
6 till 8, Tuesday night.
Paul will be there. Mary Jo will be there. Peter, will you go?
I don't know.
Come on.
They have Diet Coke Zero. They have Diet Coke Zero, I heard.
I have a very busy social life when I'm here, so I don't know.
Hi, jeez.
I got to look the right way.
We'll see.
But, you know, I got my wife in New York. I got girlfriends.
Oh, Peter!
I got mistresses.
Man. Here's a story.
But others will be there.
Of a Windows
Other bloggers.
Weekly.
Oh, the whole Windows Insider team is going to come.
Fun.
So Donna and her crew will be there.
Oh, I would love to meet Donna Sakar. I worship her from afar. That's so fun.
She's,
She saved my bacon yesterday. So
did she? What'd she do?
So I
hope you're embarrassed by this, you idiot.
This was not my finest moment. I brought a Surface Book. I did not bring a Surface Book charger.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
But see, I blame Microsoft for this because they're still adhering to that.
If it was Type-C, then I still wouldn't have brought one.
Type-C is everywhere, my friend. Like, Peter, it's everywhere.
You got a Surface adapter. You've flown to the right city.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I put out an appeal on Twitter, and Donna brought me one to my hotel yesterday.
Oh. See, Chris Capicella sends the ninjas to fix our networking problems. Donna Sakar sends you a power adapter. They're watching all the time.
They are.
Always watching.
Always watching.
It's kind of creepy, really.
No. It's great. We appreciate the help and support. We thank you. We do.
Yeah, I would have been in difficulties without electricity.
Yes. It gets good battery life, but you're here for a few days.
Not that good.
Yeah. Yeah, if I had Windows on ARM, then maybe I just wouldn't care.
Just squeak by.
Paul and I both had that HP Envy X2. And
I
have it now.
You do? Is it lappable?
I haven't even tried, but it's not going to be.
Come on, put it on my head.
Where's Mary Jo? Over there.
It's going to be lappable.
I love the form factor. It's beautiful. It's slick. I don't pick it up because I know, it's going to be a little slow.
It's like hopping in a Porsche and realizing someone stole the engine.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
You're going to love it.
It's all right if you have a Porsche because you open the trunk and you find there's a spare engine in the back.
Yeah, right.
Well, let me thank Father Robert for filling in for the last couple of weeks. He did a great job doing the show. Peter Bright, thank you for joining us from Ars Technica. Tom Warren from The Verge was also here. And as always, there's their kind of life sentence, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley.
in our Sisyphean podcast.
They keep pushing that boulder uphill and keeps hitting carriage return and they got to start all over again. Paul Thurrott is at Thurrott.com. That's his blog where he's covering Blittled and everything else. Thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com. Don't forget the field guide to Windows 10. It's always in progress, always getting better. Soon with 1803. Be a seeker. Go to leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley writes all about Microsoft all the time at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. And normally we do this show on Wednesdays around about 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. I don't know. I'm on Tokyo time.
What day is it?
1800 UTC.
But do you do any shows on the half hour like that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's all just a suggestion. It's not like you're watching NBC or something. We don't hit every...
Yeah, I've never found you very punctual. No,
it's not that I'm not punctual. It's that you're watching a raw feed of people making podcasts.
By the way, never more raw than today.
And as raw as you can get. We started, it took us an hour to get everything down. But we did, and I thank you all for joining us, and we will be back on next Wednesday. And just because Windows Weekly's not here on Wednesday this week, we've decided to put Mac Break Weekly there instead. So that'll really confuse the hell out of everybody. Oh, burn! Tomorrow, it's our live coverage of Google I.O. If you want to learn more about Windows, you might want to watch the Microsoft feed. We're not going to be doing the build coverage because we need to do the Google coverage as well. That'll start at 10 a.m. Pacific.
We'll probably write something about it.
I imagine there'll be something on the websites. Mm-hmm. 10 a.m. Pacific is 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC for our live streaming coverage of Google I/O's keynote. Following immediately after this week in Google, Jeff Jarvis and Jason Howell are both at Google I/O, and I know at least Jeff will be joining us, as well as Stacey Higginbotham. And then, of course, immediately after at 1:30 p.m.
By the way, sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
I actually met Stacey today.
Yeah. She's there. That's right.
Yeah, she was sitting next to us in the press room.
Isn't she great?
She leaned in and she said, we were talking. It was actually Peter was there and Tom. Actually, this whole crowd was there. And she kind of leaned in to me. I was on the corner and she said, are you Paul Thurrott? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, would you people please shut the hell up? No, she said.
No, she does that with love. She does that to me, too. Yeah. No, she's great. And I gather she would be there to cover IoT announcements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there were plenty of those.
Were they? Okay. Yes. So we'll probably talk a little bit about that tomorrow as well on This Week in Google. Yeah. Security Now immediately following that. Then it's Wednesday is Mac Day for a change, just for this week, with iOS Today starting at 9 a.m. Pacific and following immediately after around 11 a.m. Pacific, Mac Break Weekly. So, Peter, have a wonderful adventure.
Peter, what?
Did you talk about actually the thing that was the most remarkable? Maybe you did and I missed it. The most remarkable thing that actually happened today.
What was that, Peter Bright of Ars Technica?
That Kinect is not dead.
We briefly touched on it.
That was amazing.
What is the story there? New hardware?
Yeah, there's a little sensor package that now people can buy and stick into their devices and do Kinecty stuff.
I think that's great. I loved the Kinect.
No, that was the thing that most surprised me today, that Kinect is not actually dead.
Yeah.
It's just basically the camera that they used in Kinect that was adopted into HoloLens, right?
But it's an iterated version, they claim, so they're still working on it, apparently.
And it has the 3D depth sensing as well as
higher resolution than ever before.
The thermal imaging, does it do that as well?
Kinect is back, baby.
All right. And is there a development kit, an SDK?
Yeah, I think so.
And it's coming. Yeah, maybe next year.
It's tied to AI, though, right? So it's going to be like the HAL 9000 little red eye sitting there reading your lips. I'm sorry, Dave. You can't play that game. You've played too much Call of Duty, Paul.
That's an oxymoron, Leo.
Time to eat your vegetables, Paul. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.